Besides, does it really count without all the sparkle? Kyrus waved his hands in the air as if to demonstrate the proverbial sparkle. Vale looked pissed. Lilith looked around with a wrinkle of genuine confusion between her brows, like she was putting a lot more effort than her husband into understanding this. "Why us?" she said, in heavily accented Obitrain.
"Wonderful question."
Kyrus took a long sip of wine, then set the goblet down hard.
"Because Vale, unlike the rest of us dogs, is a true nightborn Rishon noble. He has a name that commands respect among the Rishon who have the most, we'll call it apprehension, about the king's rule."
He smiled.
"And a wedding is always a nice non-political celebration, isn't it?"
I'd seen the aftermath of enough vampire weddings to know that was certainly untrue.
"No,"
Vale said, returning to his food.
"I'm not going to give you an option on this one, Vale,"
Rain said. So very deliberately casual, in all the ways that told me nothing was casual about this conversation. Vale set down his fork. He stilled, staring unblinking at Rain.
"Lilith is foreign and turned," he said between his teeth. "This isn't the high-ranking political marriage you seem to think it is."
"Unfortunately," Kyra said, "it's the best we've got."
Vale's eyes, amber gold, fell to me.
"Is that really true? We have the king's own marriage we could celebrate."
Rain's calculated disinterest fell away like a discarded cloak. He sat up straight.
"That," he said, "isn't an option."
"And thank the fucking mother for it. I'd sooner kill myself than put myself at the center of that kind of spectacle." Anyway, everyone at the table knew that that would be a terrible idea. I was no great political mind, but even I knew that presenting my marriage to Rain as anything other than straightforward and settled would be a mistake. The fact that I was still breathing already cast doubt upon Rain's ability to rule. And besides, I was supposed to be something closer to a slave than a wife. Not a prize to be celebrated, but an enemy to be humiliated. Even Vale knew this. He winced a little, as if mentally bracing for the response.
"And you know exactly why."
Rain's voice was harsh, leaving no room for argument.
"This isn't a debate. You are doing this."
Vale's self-control briefly warred across his face, but his temper won out.
"You know what they're like. I refuse to put Lilith at their feet."
Rain let out a bark of a laugh, such a cruel and vicious sound I felt it up my spine.
"They?" he spat.
Suddenly he was on his feet, palms planted on the table, eyes brighter than flames.
"You are one of them, Vale. I saw you be one of them for the better part of a fucking century, and you had no problem with their behavior then. But now you have a turned wife, so everything has changed. Now it affects yours, so you can be moved to care. Don't feed me that bullshit."
No performances here. That was all real. More real, I suspected, than Rain wanted it to be. Vale's body was rigid. Tension drew tight in the air, all of us balancing on its edge. I was half certain that Vale was about to lunge across the table at Rain. My hands drifted to my blades on instinct. Ridiculous, because what was I going to do, leap to Rain's defense? But then Lilith jumped to her feet, shattering the breathless suspension.
"Stop," she said. "This is a stupid fight."
I wasn't expecting it. My brows lurched without my permission. Misha let out a laugh that seemed mostly unintentional. Lilith looked around the table before her gaze settled on Rain. "The House of Night needs this?" The anger drained from Rain's expression when he looked at Lilith.
"Yes,"
he said, voice immediately softer.
"I wouldn't be doing it otherwise. I promise you that."
No more performances here either. The truth. It should have been surprising for a vampire king to speak to a former human foreigner with more respect than his high-ranking noble general. And yet it didn't surprise me at all. Lilith considered this, nodding slowly. "I am not afraid,"
she said.
Vale grabbed her hand, as if trying to drag her back to her seat.
Lilith, he grumbled.
But despite her fractured obitrain, Lilith's tone was final, her stare not breaking from Rain's.
If it is what the House of Night needs, she said, then we will do it. That is it.
Chapter 31 Rain. I liked Lilith. At least she had balls. It took them to stand up and yell at a bunch of vampires speaking a language you barely even knew. After dinner, everyone filed out to their rooms. Vale remained glued to Lilith's side, his hand around hers. For a moment, I watched the two of them. I'd had my assumptions when Karis had told me that Vale was coming back from Dara with a brand new turned bride. I'd seen that story before. No, most vampires didn't decide to marry their wards. But that didn't change too much in my mind. Give someone else endless life and then take whatever you want from them afterwards. An eternity of servitude, sex, devotion. I knew that story very, very well. Especially when written by people like Vale. Even if, maybe, he seemed like he actually loved her. Admittedly, I hadn't been expecting that. I came up behind them in the hallway where Vale was whispering to Lilith in Darren. Mind if I cut in? The look Vale gave me probably had been used to gut disobedient warriors on the battlefield. Of course, he said. Keturah wanted to talk to you. Can it wait? I smiled. Better not keep her waiting. She might bite. Excuses aside, that was true. Vale glanced at Lilith and said, I have a few minutes. I can escort Lilith back to her room. He still didn't move. Fair enough for Vale to be protective of his wife. He was right for that. But the suspicion in his expression went beyond your typical possessive newlywed behavior. Fitting suspicion, maybe, for someone who lived in Neculi's court for so long, even if in a very different capacity than I did. Neculi took everything for himself, willingly or not. One might have thought it would be a little satisfying to be looked at with that kind of wariness by a noble. Instead, it made me deeply uneasy. She'll be safe, I said. A little bit of a lilting joke, a little bit of genuine reassurance. Promise. Reluctantly and with a small nod from Lilith, Vale left. I gestured down the hall and Lilith and I set off in silence. She definitely was an unusual woman. I fought a bemused smile when she spent the entire length of the first hallway staring at me outright. Not just the typical curious glances, but actually staring and doing absolutely nothing to hide it. You'll walk into a wall if you don't look where you're going, I said in Darren. At that, she almost did walk into a wall. She smiled.
You speak Darren?
A little out of practice, I said. Goddess, I hadn't spoken my own mother tongue in centuries. The syllables now felt uncomfortable on my tongue, maybe because I felt like a very different man when I spoke them. Her brows lowered as if deep in thought.
Because you're turned. Vale told me that.
I really did struggle to stifle my laugh at that one. Karis had complained about her bluntness, but I found it oddly refreshing. I'd never once had someone so directly say something so rude. At my reaction, her brows lowered.
That was impolite, she said,
though she said it as if it was a guess, like she really wasn't sure how to read the expression on my face. No, it's true. I was born in Pachnai, very human at the time. And you're from?
Adkava.
I haven't heard of it.
No one has.
Do you like what you've seen of Obitrae so far?
It's unlike any place I've ever been. It's beautiful and dark and intriguing.
Her eyes went far off, staring straight ahead, as if far past the wall at the end of the hall and beyond.
I imagine I could spend a lifetime here and not see all it has to offer. The history in this place and the... She cut herself off. I don't mean to ramble. I apologize.
No need. It was nice to see someone enthusiastic about something. The idea of seeing so much beauty and potential in Obitres was foreign to me. A little refreshing in a romantic kind of way. Has it been difficult to leave your home?
No, she said. I never belonged there.
And the other transition? Again, she stopped walking. This time she didn't resume, staring at me hard.
Forgive me for what I'm about to say, she said. But why are you talking to me?
At that, I couldn't help but laugh. You are blunt. She tucked a strand of wavy hair behind her ear.
I've grown up knowing I would live a very short life. It's more efficient to be direct.
I appreciate it. Turns out near immortality makes people far too long-winded. We continued walking, and I went on. As long as we're being blunt, I'm just surprised because when I heard that Vale, a vampire noble, had turned a human woman to bring back as his wife, I expected a very pretty, very polite, very subservient little thing.
I'm none of those things, she said.
She was objectively pretty, if not my taste, but no, definitely not subservient or polite.
I'm no good at games, Highness, she said. I'd like to know what your concern is. Are you worried that I'll embarrass you at this celebration?
I hadn't thought about that, but maybe someone really should make sure she didn't get to talk to anyone important and easily offended. I was unsure how to word my next question. Unsure how much I wanted to show this woman I barely knew. Just the fact that I was having this conversation with her revealed more than I felt comfortable showing. You will find, I said at last, that most vampires don't think especially highly of the turned.
I've gathered that.
Many vampires don't have especially benevolent reasons for turning a human. My maker was no exception. So, since you like to be blunt, I'll be blunt too. If you don't want to be here, Lilith, you don't need to be here. If any of this has been against your will,
no.
She bit out the word fast, then laughed, like I just said something ridiculous.
No, it's not like that. Vale turned me to save my life.
I didn't find this especially convincing. They always say that, I wanted to tell her.
Do you want to live?
Neculi had asked me, and I'd said yes to. I'd begged for life, like a fucking fool. Sometimes it can start that way, I said.
But I'm here because I want to be here, she said firmly. Vale treats me with nothing but respect and affection.
I'd been watching closely, and I had never seen anything that contradicted that. But I was still skeptical. Vale was the same man who had witnessed horrific abuse on turned slaves in Neculi's court, and had treated it as nothing but normalcy. Good, I said. I'm happy to hear that. Just know that if anything changes, you will never be trapped. Not here. Not in my court. A faint smile flitted across her mouth.
I appreciate that. More concern than I thought I would get from the king.
She stopped at a set of double doors.
This is my room.
Then she bowed her head.
Thank you for walking me.
I waved away the bow. Of course. I started to turn away, but Lilith called after me.
Highness?
I glanced back over my shoulder.
You're distrustful of Vale, she said.
That was very true, and also something I was absolutely not going to admit out loud. Vale is my highest general, and I give him all the trust befitting that position. She looked unconvinced.
You dislike him, then? Why?
Ix's tits, this woman. I smirked. I'm sure Vale has his reservations about me, too. Lilith didn't answer, and that was answer enough for me. You'll learn eventually that it's a strange thing to be so long-lived, I said. So much can change in a couple of centuries. But you carry all that shit with you anyway. Centuries worth of it.
She smiled a little. Not so different from humans.
I shrugged. Maybe not. I turned away again, uninterested in sharing more uncomfortable honesty. Good night, Lilith. Thank you for indulging my curiosity.
Chapter 32. Araya. The castle looked different. I couldn't remember if it had been this way when we'd left, or if it had changed in the time we had been away. Either could be true. Before, I was in such a haze of grief and anger that I could barely process the world around me. Now, as I wandered around the twilight empty halls of the castle, I wondered if it had always been this bare. So different than when my father had ruled this place, all the Hiage art stripped away. I'd expected that they would quickly be replaced with Rishon art, Rishon trophies, Rishon artifacts. All the same preening signals of power, just with a different kind of wing. But Rain hadn't done that. He'd left the walls bare. The whole castle was empty, as if trapped in the space between an exhale and an inhale. Maybe that was what drove me out into the human district that night. Nothing about my home looked familiar anymore, so perhaps I was looking for something familiar out in those dilapidated streets. After all, they had forged me just as much as the castle had. Or maybe I just really needed to go kill something that deserved it. I'd accept that answer, too. But when I got there, the human districts had changed, too. They were quiet. I hadn't been out here in months, not since Rain and I had come during the Qajari. In the past, whenever I'd neglected my duties for more than a couple of weeks, the district would be crawling with vampires. I expected to find a killing field ripe for a harvest. Instead, perplexingly, I found no one at all. Not a single hunting vampire. Nothing. After a few hours, I sighed and leaned against the wall. Reluctantly, I slid my blades into their sheaths. Was I actually disappointed that I wouldn't find anyone to kill tonight? That was selfish of me. I should be glad. I was glad. And confused. A little suspicious. A welcome gust of wind cooled the sweat on my skin. It sent a wooden sign across the street clattering against the brick building. My gaze fell to it, to the sign that read, Sadders, but perhaps had once said, Sandra's. A familiar, shitty little pub. I rubbed my dry tongue against the roof of my mouth. Suddenly, the taste of cold, foamy, absolutely fucking terrible beer sounded strangely appealing. I stood up, stretched, and decided I could handle a detour. I didn't know what the hell I was thinking. I kept my leathers buttoned all the way up to my throat, more than far enough to hide my air mark, and drew my hood up tight. My wings were gone. I had no sharp canines. Most importantly, I wasn't a vampire. And yet, I still felt so out of place. Every time someone casually glanced my way, I had to resist the urge to run. The pub was packed, even more than it had been when I'd come here with Rain. It smelled of sweat and beer and burning candles. Voices all melded together into a single rush of laughs and jokes and flirtations and ill-fated bets on cards. I had been surprised the first time I came here to see how relaxed the patrons were. It had seemed foolish for a human in Obitrace to do anything but live in constant fear. Now they seemed even more carefree. And this time, maybe I couldn't fault them for it. I'd spend hours wandering these streets in search of dangers to protect them from, and had found none. Maybe that was worthy of celebration. Still, their behavior felt foreign to me. If some tiny part of me had come here searching for familiarity, I hadn't found it. I had some human blood, but I was nothing like these people, even if a part of me wished I was. "Hey, pretty girl, you here alone?" A young copper-haired man said, sidling up to me, and I shot him a dagger stare that made him make a face and immediately turn away. I realized after he left that I'd had my hands on my blades. For fuck's sake, What was I doing here?
You don't belong here, little serpent,
Vincent whispered in my ear.
Here among the mice.
Even in my head, his voice was so disgusted by them, so dismissive. I could hear it so clearly, because I'd heard that tone from him countless times in life. It set my teeth on edge. My fingers tightened at my sides. Fear is a collection of physical responses. I forced my breath to slow, my heart rate to lower. If Rain could do it, I could certainly do it. I managed to fight my way to the bar by wielding some mixture of appropriately stomped feet, pointy elbows, and my ability to be small enough to slip between the hulking bodies of sweaty bearded men. Ugh. Humans did sweat so much more than vampires. When I made it to the bar and the barkeep, a wiry old man with deep-set, tired eyes turned to me. I froze. Seconds passed. The barkeep looked increasingly pissed with everyone.
Well, he pressed. We're busy, kid.
Beer. I choked out finally. The barkeep stared flatly at me.
One beer, I tried. Two beers.
A deep, very amused voice corrected from behind me. Familiar warmth encircled me as a large body leaned against the bar beside me. I recognized him long before I looked at him. How the hell did he find me here? Rain murmured in my ear,
You brag about winning the Kajari, but you don't know how to order a beer.
My face heated. Not a very useful skill, I grumbled.
Really? I found it very useful.
The barkeep returned with two mugs of foamy brown liquid, and Rain slid a couple of coins to him with a jerked half nod of thanks. It had been long enough since I'd seen this version of him that it was jarring all over again. He wore a dark cloak with a slightly yellowed white shirt unbuttoned distractingly too low, his hair messy and unbound. Everything about his body language mirrored those around us. Casual, rough, unpolished. Unmistakably human. Still, I noticed he kept his hood up this time. Maybe he trusted his disguise a little less than he used to. He took the two mugs and gestured to a little semi-secluded table across the room, not far from the spot he and I sat the first time we came here. The place was so crowded that he practically had to fight his way through, though of course he managed to do it with a lot less overt aggression than I had. Helped to be huge, apparently. Why are you here? I asked, as soon as we were at our table. His brow twitched.
You planned on drinking alone? How depressing.
Were you following me? He set the mugs down and raised his palms.
Easy, Viper. I'm here for the same reasons you are. The seductive allure of piss beer. Good to know it's grown on you.
He smiled, and I didn't. So it's just a God-chosen coincidence that you've shown up here?
Your sarcasm is so subtle, Princess. Elegant and refined, like fine wine. Or this beer.
He took a swig, made a face, and let out a refreshed sigh.
What? You think I've been spying on you?
That's exactly what I think.
So what if I have? You think Misha is that shitty of a bodyguard that you could slip out into the human districts and no one would know?
Embarrassingly, it hadn't even occurred to me that Misha had seen me go. So you were tailing me, I said.
No, I knew you could handle yourself. This part, you and I ending up here at the same time, that actually is luck. I come here a lot. Missed it while we were gone.
I did have to admit I believed that. A part of Rain existed out here that didn't exist in the Nightborne Castle. Maybe just like a part of me existed here that couldn't there too. I sipped my beer and winced at the bitter taste.
Ugh.
Hasn't gotten better with time, huh?
No. And yet I took another sip. I wasn't sure how something could taste so good and so bad at once.
So,
he took another swig of beer.
It's been quite a while since you had a nighttime patrol out here. How'd it go?
I knew a leading question when I heard one. The way Rain was watching me out of the corner of his eye as he drank his beer told me enough. My eyes narrowed. His brow raised. I leaned across the table. He leaned back against the bench, hands behind his head.
"If I didn't know better," he said, "I'd say that expressive face of yours is accusing me of something."
"What happened out here?"
"What do you mean?"
"Oh, mother damn him, he was playing with me. You know what," I said. "It's
quiet," he provided. "Peaceful."
"There's no one to kill."
He chuckled and leaned closer, his face only a few inches from mine, and murmured, "You sound so disappointed, my murderous queen."
My gaze fell to his mouth as he said that.
Fell to the little smile that curled its edge. Something softer and more playfully affectionate than his usual performative smirks.
I knew the way that smile felt against my lips, knew how it tasted. This thought struck me without permission, visceral and uncomfortable. Even more uncomfortable than that was the longing that came with it. A sudden deep pang, like the drawing of a bow across the mournful string of a violin. I leaned back, putting a few more inches of distance between us.
"No," I said. "It's a good thing, it's just..." "This place should be filled with criminals by now, since you, the heroic savior of the human districts, have been a little distracted."
I glowered because I knew he was teasing me, but nodded anyway. "Yes." He took an aggressively casual sip of beer.
"Has it occurred to you that maybe the human districts now have another protector?"
"You?" I didn't bother to hide my disbelief. "What, you're telling me that you sneak out here every night to go inflict vigilante justice on these poor bastards?" On one hand, it was ridiculous. Rain was the Nightborn King, after all. Not as if he should have the time to go skulking around in the human districts every night. Then again, was it really any more unbelievable than that person being me? He set down his mug.
"You're thinking too small, princess."
His voice was low, like he didn't want to be heard.
"You talk about vigilante justice, but I don't need vigilante anything anymore. That's what it means to rule a kingdom. It means the ability to change things."
The little curl still clung to the corner of his mouth, like a permanent shield, but his eyes were serious. Vulnerable, even. Realization slowly dawned.
"You? I made the necessary commands and the necessary changes to make sure that the human districts are and always will be safe. Yes."
"How? It was always forbidden to hunt in the human districts, but..."
"But it happened anyway. Why?"
I didn't answer. He gave me a sad, knowing look.
"Because no one actually cared. Because no one enforced those laws. No one guarded the perimeters after dark. No one punished those who disobeyed. Well, no one except for you."
A sour knot formed in my stomach. I thought of those districts I would hunt night after night, always catching at least one more culprit. Thought of what my father had showed me, mere days before he died. All those humans, soaked in blood, pinned to the table. Nothing but food. "You mean Vincent," I said. "He was happy to just let the human districts be preyed upon?" Even now, I half expected to hear his voice in my ear, an explanation, a defense, a rebuke. But there was nothing. Not even my imaginary version of my father could justify his choice. And that's exactly what it had been. A choice. Rain was an unpopular king who had been in power for mere months, all of them tumultuous, and he had still managed to make the human districts far safer than they were before. Vincent just never cared to. Even with his human daughter, he never cared to.
"Not just Vincent," Rain said. "All of them. Neculi was no better."
I swallowed thickly. "He always told me," I said, "that nothing could be done." Nothing could be done about so many things.
my family and Rishon territory, the humans and the human districts, even the human districts of Sivrinaj. Even my powerlessness could only be solved with a wish from Nyaxia. A wry smile flitted across Rain's mouth. They have a way of bending reality, don't they? Making it exactly what they say it is. My knuckles were white around my mug. The words flowed over my tongue before I could stop them. I feel like such a fucking idiot, because I never questioned any of it. I didn't want to see the pity in Rain's eyes. I kept my gaze glued to the table as he murmured, "I never questioned any of it either, for a hell of a lot longer than 20 years. But that's what happens when one person gets to shape your entire world. They can make it into whatever they want, and you're stuck inside those walls, whether they're real or not." How could he sound so calm about it? I was desperate for calm. "And they just get to die?" I spat. "They just get to escape the consequences?" The hatred in my words took me by surprise. I should have been ashamed to think such a thing. That Vincent's bloody death had been the easy way out, cheating us all out of answers. I wasn't, and that scared me. My eyes flicked up to meet Rain's. Warm and red in the dim lantern light, they held no hint of the pity I'd expected. Instead, they were fierce and steadfast. "No," he said. "We get to use the power we got from them to make this kingdom into something they fucking despise. What's the point of any of this if there's nothing to actually fight for?" There had always been a snide, petty part of myself that had doubted whether Rain's grand declarations were just another performance for my benefit. In this moment, I knew he was telling the truth. I knew it because the determination, the spite in his eyes, mirrored the glimpses of it I saw in myself. It was a sudden realization. A truth snapping into place to reveal an uncomfortable portrait. The simple thing had always been to hate Rain, to tell myself that he was my enemy, my captor, my conqueror. But Vincent had spent my entire life telling me convenient lies. Maybe I didn't have the stomach for it anymore. Maybe the complicated truth was that Rain was more like me than anyone ever had been, Rishon heir or no. He leaned a little closer. Those eyes drifted from mine, running over my forehead, my nose, my lips. He murmured, "We need to talk about—" smack as his forehead whacked against mine, making me see stars. "Fuck!" I hissed, jerking back and rubbing my head. Rain did the same to his as he peered over his shoulder, annoyed, as the same young man who had approached me earlier held up his hands apologetically. "Sorry, sorry." He took in Rain's considerable size, then made the very nervy decision to clap him on the shoulder. "That was an accident. Crowded in here. Didn't mean to get in your—" Then the man's face changed. The smarmy smile faded. His eyes widened and just kept going until they were comically perfect circles. He stumbled backwards, nearly tripping over two of his companions. "Highness," he breathed. My heart sank. "Fuck." Rain's face fell as the boy dropped clumsily to his knees, his hands raised. "My king, I apologize. I apologize. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." Rain ducked his head, wincing, as if he could make the boy unsee what he had recognized. But it was too late. And just like that, the room turned. It took a few seconds for people to realize, but once they did, the silence spread through the crowd like the blanketed fall of night. Soon, every set of eyes was trained on Rain, all wide, all terrified. And for one moment, Rain's gaze fell back to me, utterly devastated. Just a glimpse, before he quickly swept it away under a mask of nonchalant ease. He rose and raised his palms. "No harm done," he said. "Didn't mean to cause a commotion." He glanced around the room, now pin drop silent, half the patrons on their knees and the other half looking too terrified to even make themselves bow. We should go,
he muttered to me, and took my hand. I didn't even pull away as he led me out the door, the crowd parting around us like they couldn't get away fast enough.
Chapter 33. Araya. Rain didn't talk for a long time when we returned to the city streets. He was walking fast, and I matched his pace, not sure where he was going. He adjusted his hood, looking straight ahead, not so much as glancing at me. But he didn't have to. I felt a pang of sympathy for him. He had few pieces of his human identity left. I knew how much he valued the shards he could salvage. As much as he tried to pretend it was all about shitty beer, I knew otherwise. I shouldn't care. I knew I shouldn't care. Yet I just kept walking beside him. Sorry, he muttered finally once we had walked a couple of blocks. It's nothing. It wasn't nothing. Not really. I guess I can't go back there for a while, he said. But at least, he stopped short, and I realized that we'd come to the same boarding house he'd brought me to before. He flashed me a wry smirk, barely visible under the shadow of his hood. At least we have some other safe havens. The man at the front desk was, once again, asleep, at which I could have sworn Rain breathed a sigh of relief. He led me up to his apartment. The place looked the same as it had the last time we were here, though a little messier. More papers scattered over the desk, a used wine glass beside the basin, the bedsheets a little rumpled. I eyed those bedsheets longer than I meant to. Rain sat down at the edge of the bed and fell back over it, sprawling out as if collapsing from exhaustion. Then he caught my eye and grinned. What? He said. You want to join me? A teasing prod, of course, and yet I could imagine it so clearly. How his body had felt beneath me. How he'd smelled. How he'd tasted. What he'd sounded like when he came. How he'd held me when I did. I hated him for touching me the way he had back at the cottage. Just brought all those unwelcome thoughts back to the surface. You ever have companions up here? I asked. What the hell? Why did I even ask that? I made a mental note to never drink again. His smile broadened, brow furrowing. What? Never mind. Are you asking if I fuck other women in this bed? Never mind, I grumbled, turning away. But he caught my hand, fingers gently intertwining with mine. Not pulling, though, just hanging there between us. I'm married, he said. In case you forgot. Despite myself, I almost smiled. A difficult marriage. No one would blame you for seeking some easy pleasure.
What are you doing, Araya?
He scoffed.
Easy pleasure, like there's such a thing.
His fingers drew a little tighter, pulling my palm closer, drawing my fingers between his. The slide of his rough skin against mine sending uncomfortable shudders through other parts of my body. His eyes didn't leave mine.
I like a little fight,
he murmured.
Besides, she's ruined me for all others. My own fucking fault, though. I knew it from the beginning.
His hood had fallen back, dark red hair fanning behind him on the bedspread. His shirt, partially unbuttoned, revealed a triangle of his defined chest and a hint of dark hair. The muscles of his throat shifted as he swallowed, perfectly in time with the slight shudder in my breath, like he sensed my desire and was reacting to it. He was lonely. I was lonely. Both of us were mourning the worlds we'd thought we'd known. At least this time I was willing to admit to myself that I was tempted. Maybe that was why I was willing to dangle my fingertips close to the flames.
Hard pleasure, then, I said. Only good if it hurts, he replied.
I took a step closer to the bed, so my legs were pressed against the mattress, Rain's knee between them, nearly brushing the apex of my thighs.
I'm fucking exhausted. So tired of pretending.
Even then, I'd been pretending. Pretending I didn't feel what he did. The hunger. He sat up slowly, the movement making his knee slide forward. I could have stepped away, but I didn't. Instead, I settled into it, pulling myself partially onto his lap. The pressure of his leg and the roughness of his clothing and mine, sending a little spark of pleasure up my spine. I lifted our intertwined hands, tilted so his thumb was facing me, and before I knew what I was doing, lowered my mouth to it. His skin was salty and clean. Even his hands held that scent of him, that scent of the desert and warmth. I slid my tongue over the rough pad of his thumb, drawing a slow exhale from Rain. I held his gaze, unblinking, and he didn't relinquish it, meeting the challenge. He wasn't even breathing. I wasn't sure why I did what I did next. My body just acted without me. I bit. He let out a hiss of surprise, but the spark in his eyes wasn't one of pain or anger. I let more of my weight fall onto his knee, my hips shifting. Hot, salty, iron-tinted liquid flowed over my tongue. Rain's blood was... Mother, it was exquisite. Even the few drops that rolled over my tongue were intoxicating, sweet and savory and rich, seductive as wine and sugar. It staggered me, the rush of it sending me spiraling. Before I could stop myself, my tongue pressed against his skin again, cheeks hollowing. Rain's other hand had migrated to my shoulder, then my throat, then my face, his other thumb now stroking my cheek. My eyes closed, as if my entire body wanted to focus more fully on the pleasure of it. And yet I knew he was watching me. He let out a low, rough chuckle. I felt it shiver through my entire body, my core, my spine. The sound jerked me back to this world, pulling me from the haze of his blood. I released him and jerked back. Perhaps I was half vampire, but my teeth weren't especially sharp. The gash I'd opened was far less graceful than the two delicate little scars he'd placed on my throat, an ugly, jagged line of purling red-black. My embarrassment rose to the surface, too, congealing like his blood. What the hell had I just done? If Rain was surprised or offended, he didn't show it.
You have a little...
His other thumb swept over my lower lip, pressing over the plump curve of it. His smile faded into thoughtfulness as it lingered there.
You are full of surprises, princess,
he murmured. Mother, I was never, ever, ever drinking alcohol again. I released his hand abruptly, and he quickly darted it to my back to keep me from falling backwards. Since I was still precariously balanced on his knee, my weight now entirely supported on him.
Easy. Let's not get too overwhelmed.
I don't know why I didn't mean... His brow twitched with amusement.
It's all right to be curious.
I don't know why I just did that. My face was warm, which was even more embarrassing. He shrugged.
Sometimes it's no use to question our more primal instincts. You're half vampire, Aurea. You're still learning the way that affects you.
I'd known it for months, and it still didn't get any less jarring to hear it said aloud. It didn't help that Rain looked so amused by the whole thing.
So good, I take it,
he said. I couldn't bring myself to say aloud that good was not a strong enough word. I had tasted Rain's blood before, when we'd fucked, and again during the wedding. Even then, I had been surprised by its appeal. And then, with the blood at Evelina's party, I cleared my throat. I tasted blood by accident, at Evelina's ball, and it was... That had probably been human, taken from someone who had no choice in it, taken from someone who had paid for it with their life. My face must have grown solemn because Rain's did too.
You liked it.
I didn't think...
Half vampires are rare. All of them have different traits. It makes sense that blood would taste good to you.
His thumb stroked my cheek again. An easy motion,
like he was doing it without thinking. It doesn't have to mean anything. It's just how your body reacts. Doesn't mean you support it or that you have to drink it. You tasted different. A pained smirk flitted across his mouth. That can happen.
I didn't even know what question to ask, or if I could find the right words, if I even wanted to hear it confirmed aloud.
You did taste different,
Rain had told me.
I thought it was because of how I feel about you. As if he saw me putting those pieces together, he murmured, "It doesn't have to mean anything. Just your body."
Fucking figured that my body had to react to Rain of all people. Just had to make this situation even more complicated than it already was. He removed his hand from my back and examined his thumb, still bloody.
"But if you wanted to experiment," he said, "we could do that in better ways than this."
He lifted his chin a little, as if to present his throat. I scoffed. "You'd offer me your throat? That's stupid of you."
"Maybe. But you do have a fucking exquisite mouth. And an even better tongue."
Goddess. Now he was definitely teasing me. "Oh, fuck you," I muttered.
"And there she is,"
he chuckled.
I let out a breath, trying to shake away the lingering sensation of Rain's taste and his overwhelming proximity.
I felt like his scent now covered me, like condensation clinging to glass. I stood up, grateful to put some space between us. "You said there was something we needed to talk about," I said. "Why are we here?" His face twisted into a scowl.
"Oh, you want to talk work."
I sat on the little dining table across the room while Rain talked. He leaned casually against the bed frame. Somehow, the thing supported his weight and managed to look completely nonplussed by our entire interaction, which I couldn't tell if I found admirable or annoying.
"So," he said, "the wedding."
"So you're going to tell me what that's actually about?" He gave me a half smile.
"That obvious, huh?"
I shrugged. "Call it intuition."
"We have problems, as you know. The Bloodborne. No matter my commands, they haven't been letting up on their viciousness," he said. "Some areas have been totally devastated by their actions."
"Hiage areas?"
"They're all my kingdom." He cocked his head. "So you've been keeping track of things?"
I shrugged again. It was my kingdom, too. It was my job to pay attention.
"And we're no closer to finding this godblood."
I thought of the pendant, safely wrapped and hidden in my locked bedchamber. Mysterious as it was, it hadn't actually given us any information. No matter how many books we read or spells Misha and I threw at the thing, we had, embarrassingly, no clue what it even was. Rain winced.
"No, it doesn't seem like it. On top of that, I had to rush back to Sivrnage because of rebellion from a few of the Rishon nobles, as you know."
He tried to hide his annoyance, deeper than annoyance, and failed. I watched him with a wrinkle between my brows. "They really hate you." He scoffed.
"Of course they do. Many of these people were friends of Neculi's, and they saw me."
Did he know that he always bit off his words whenever he talked about those days? His eyes slipped away, staring at the floor.
"They were never going to accept me as king," he said. "It's just some of the smaller ones for now. But the one I'm really concerned about has been too quiet. Simon Visaris."
I recognized that name. "You killed his brother that first meeting."
"The very same."
Rain's gaze flicked away. The look on his face, it was too familiar. He didn't need to outright tell me who this man was to him. I understood.
"He's coming to the wedding,"
Rain went on. And that tone, too, told me everything I needed to know. He didn't just hate this man. He was afraid of him. Why?
"Because he has a bigger army than I do, and I need to make nice with him until I have a better solution."
his lip curled, the disgust palpable in his voice. A better solution. Me. Of course. The Godblood, I said. He let out a long breath, pacing to the desk. He pressed his palms to the wood and leaned over it for a long moment as if deep in thought.
I've invited the House of Shadow to this party, he said.
My brows leapt. I'd seen Shadowborn royalty a few times. It was rare to invite them to Nightborn events, but not unheard of. Rain was a new king. It would make sense that he would be extending these kinds of diplomatic ties, and that the Shadowborn would be interested in indulging their curiosity.
The Shadowborn king hates the House of Blood as much as we do, he said. He doesn't want the Bloodborn taking over the House of Night and creeping closer to his borders. The Shadowborn might be the quietest of the houses, but they're formidable warriors too. And their mind magic.
He shrugged, as if to say, what else is there?
They're powerful. I've made the connection to the Shadowborn king personally. He's sending one of his sons. If I'm able to pull the right strings, present the right image, I could gain their alliance.
It was a stretch. True alliances between the houses were rare. Vampires were independent and self-serving creatures. But then again, if anything could motivate an alliance between the houses of Shadow and Night, it would be aggression from the House of Blood.
That'll be some tricky political maneuvering, I said.
Rain laughed wryly.
Don't I know it? But Garrus is right. The wedding is an opportunity to present an image, and I do know the power of that.
That, I knew, was true.
I need outside assistance, need the image of a strong alliance. The Rishon.
He shook his head, jaw tight.
The old nobles won't be convinced by anything other than a major show of force. I need to show them I'm just as powerful as Nekulai was.
What does Kyrus think of this plan?
He knows that I've invited the House of Shadow, but doesn't know why. No one knows.
I blinked in surprise at the reveal and that he was willing to share that with me. Why not? He didn't answer right away.
The Rishon rebels, he said finally,
knew more than they should have. Little things. Nothing major. It's circumstantial. But I know how to trust my gut.
My brow furrowed as the realization dawned on me. You think you have a traitor?
He gave me a look that I knew meant confirmation.
Do you know who? I asked. Again, he didn't answer. My brain was moving now. Rain's inner circle was so small. Kyrus and Keturah? He must trust them completely because he had left Misha in their care at her most vulnerable, the ultimate expression of his confidence. And Misha, of course, would never betray Rain. That left Vale, I said. You think it's Vale?
Vale was a noble. Vale had known Rain 200 years ago, when he was nothing but Nekulai's slave. Vale had seen Rain at his weakest. In vampire society, it was hard to come back from that. Rain said nothing. But again, I could see the confirmation he didn't say aloud.
What will it take, I said, to convince the House of Shadow to ally with you?
They won't want to give you that kind of power. Not enough to go up against the House of Blood and your own little traitors.
They won't skimp. Not when it comes to putting the Bloodborn in their place. And if I manage to gain the respect of the other houses, that should be enough to make my own detractors shut up.
His brow twitched. And earn the respect of the Hiage, maybe, with your help.
I scoffed. You're a dreamer.
Couldn't have made it this far if I wasn't.
He was giving me a certain look that I immediately recognized, like he was sizing me up for something.
It reminded me of the Qajari, and the look on his face before he asked me to be his ally. My eyes narrowed.
He let out a short laugh. What's that face for? What did I do?
When you look at me like that, I know to brace myself.
He touched his chest.
Ouch. You were about to be very happy about what I was going to say next, actually. I doubt that. Let's call it a challenge. He stopped a few paces short of me, a smile tugging at the corner of his mouth. Here's the thing, Princess. Once I have the support of the House of Shadow, Septimus's strange little side projects won't matter as much. Which means, I won't need you anymore. I blinked at him in surprise. I wasn't sure if I was hearing what I thought I was. We get through the wedding, he said. You help me present the image of the powerful Rishon Conqueror. I gain the support of the House of Shadow, and if I do that, then you're free.
Free? The word stuck in my mind, like sap in the gears of a machine. I just stared at him. I had never been beyond the boundaries of the House of Night. Hell, up until less than a year ago, I had never even been beyond the borders of Siphonage. At least, not in a time I could remember. My life had always been one of confinement. Confinement in my room, in my fragile human body, in Vincent's rules and expectations, in whatever this was between Rain and I. I'd heard of this, animals who had been held in captivity for so long that they didn't know what to do with an open door. The Hiage are just as much my subjects as the Rishon are. And the humans, Rain said softly. I'll treat them fairly. I hope I've shown you that I would. As much as I hated to admit it to myself, he had. This place has taken everything from you, Aurea. Even things it had no business asking for, when you were far too young to give them. You're young. You're beautiful. You're powerful. You could do whatever you want. You could build whatever life you dreamed of. I forced my gaze up from the table to meet his. You deserve to be happy. Happy? The thought was laughable. I didn't even know what happiness meant. What if you let me go and I just turn around and wage my own war on you? He laughed. A valid possibility. More than valid. It would be the only course of action expected of me by those that followed me. It's stupid of you to let me go.
Some people have been saying it was stupid of me to keep you alive at all. I guess I'm a stupid man.
I stared at him, brow furrowed, jaw set, picking apart his casually pleasant expression as if I could make sense of this by peeling back every layer of his skin. I don't understand, I said finally. It was the only thing I could think to say, and it was embarrassingly true.
Think on it. See where that vicious imagination of yours takes you.
He leaned closer, and I couldn't be sure, but maybe I imagined the slight sadness in his eyes hidden beneath the crinkles of his amused smile.
Freedom, Aurea. You should have had it your whole life, but better late than never.
Chapter 34. Aurea.
Freedom. Rain's words echoed in my head long after our meeting and into the days beyond. They lingered behind my every thought as I went through the motions of my routine. Training, pacing, eating, reading. Rain stayed out of my way for those next weeks. Probably because he, like just about everyone else, was preoccupied pulling this ridiculous wedding together. The Nightborne Castle was abuzz with chaotic energy, dozens of servants running around to sweep away the remaining evidence of the coup's disorganized mess and replace it with grand symbols of Rishon power, fit for a bloodthirsty, powerful king of one of the most bloodthirsty, powerful empires in the world. The day before the wedding, I wandered the deserted halls of the castle on my own. It was eerily quiet after the near-constant flurry of activity these last 2 weeks. On the eve of the wedding, the work had been done. Everyone was holed up. I relished the quiet of these hours. I wandered into various libraries, sitting rooms, meeting rooms, studies, places I had never been allowed when this place was really my home. All were empty. Until
I rounded a corner into one of the libraries, dimly lit with the faintest dregs of sunlight beneath the velvet curtains, and stopped short. I immediately backed away, but a smooth voice said,
"You don't have to leave."
"Sorry," I said. "Didn't mean to interrupt." The scent of cigarillo smoke pooled in a room this small. Vincent would have been appalled to have it staining the pages of these books. Septimus gave me a pleasant smile. The fire was lit, backlighting his silhouette, making his platinum hair seem downright golden.
"Not at all,"
he gestured to the other chair.
"We haven't gotten to catch up in a while. Join me."
I didn't move, and he chuckled.
"I don't bite, Dove. I promise."
It wasn't exactly Septimus's bite that I was afraid of. Actually, the days when teeth were my biggest worry now seemed a little quaint. His clothes were disheveled, his shirt unbuttoned, just enough to reveal a hint of darkness at his chest. His eyes seemed more golden than usual, more threads of amber and the silver. Though perhaps that was just the reflection of the fire and the darkness that bracketed them.
"You look tired," I said. "Does Rain like you because you have such a way with flattery?"
He gestured to the chair again.
"Sit. Soak up the quiet before this place becomes a hellscape of peacocking nobles tomorrow."
I hated to agree with Septimus, but ugh. Still, it was my curiosity more than anything that brought me across the room. And fine, maybe it was a little craving for mortal pleasures that led me to accept when he offered me a cigarillo. I turned down the match, though, lighting it myself with a little spark of night flame. His eyebrows rose slightly.
"Impressive.
You watched me fight in the Qajari, and lighting a cigarillo is what impresses you?"
"Sometimes the little things are harder than the big things."
He slid the matches back into his pocket. I watched his hands in the movement, watched the tremble of his little finger and ring finger on his left hand. Constant now. Bloodborne curses. Was that a sign of his? The symptoms varied. Some were near universal. The red eyes, the black scarlet veins underneath thinning skin. The insanity, of course, at the very end. Everyone knew that the bloodborne turned into little more than animals. Like demons, stuck in a perpetual state of frenzied bloodlust, incapable of thought or emotion. But even that was often whispered about. The bloodborne were protective and secretive. They hid their weakness as well.
"It's nice to see you wandering about on your own," he said. "Out of your cage, for once."
"I'm not caged."
"Maybe not now, but you were. A pity. Rain is the only one around here who recognizes what he has in you. Vincent certainly didn't."
Strange how much of my own mental narrative lately had been stewing in anger over Vincent's behavior. But even the slightest comment against him from someone else, and I was biting back defenses in my teeth. "I have a blunt question for you," I asked, and Septimus looked a little delighted.
"I love blunt questions.
Why are you here? Why are you helping Rain?" He exhaled smoke through his nostrils.
"I told you what my goal is."
"God, blood." I let the words drip with sarcasm.
"Oh, such venom. Yes, Dove. God, blood."
"So you can what? Flaunt your power to all the other houses? You'd risk fucking with the gods for that?" At that, he laughed, a sound like a snake slithering through the brush.
"Tell me, Aurea," he said. "How did it feel to grow up immortal in a world of immortals?"
When I didn't answer, he took another drag of his cigarillo.
"I'll guess. Your dear father always made sure you knew exactly how weak you were. Exactly how good your blood smelled. Exactly how fragile your skin was. You probably spent your entire short life cowering in fear. Yes?"
"Watch it," I hissed.
"You're insulted."
He leaned forward, eyes glinting amber in the firelight.
"Don't be. I respect fear. Only the foolish don't.
I scoffed, inhaling my cigarillo, enjoying the burn through my nostrils. Septimus's brow twitched.
You don't believe me.
I'm not so sure you believe you. He chuckled, his gaze slipping to the fire.
I'd like to tell you a story.
A story.
An entertaining one, I promise. Full of all the darkest pleasures.
Despite myself, I was curious. He arched his brows at me, taking my silence as tacit approval.
Once upon a time,
he began,
there was a kingdom of ruin and ash. The kingdom was beautiful once, a very long time ago. But then, some 2,000 years ago, the people of this grand kingdom pissed off their goddess and... Well, that's not the sad tale I'll tell you tonight.
The smirk faded from his lips. With the firelight reflecting so harshly on the cut panes of his face, hollower maybe than they were a few months ago, he resembled a statue.
No, he said. I'll tell you a tale of a prince of the House of Blood.
Oh, about himself. That figured.
The kingdom of the House of Blood had suffered for 2 millennia now. Its people destined to die early deaths that afford them little dignity.
He went on.
The Bloodborne are a proud people. They don't allow outsiders to witness the ugliest parts of themselves. But trust when I tell you that the death of a Bloodborne curse is an ugly one. While the other 2 vampire kingdoms thrived, building empires on the backs of their goddess-gifted immortality, this kingdom clawed its way along, trapped in a cycle of endless life and eternal death, surviving but little more.
I took another drag of my cigarillo. Septimus's was untouched now, dangling between his fingertips.
But,
he said,
some time ago, the king fell in love. The king's lover was young and optimistic. Despite the woes of her kingdom, she believed that things could change. The king, he was no romantic. It's no easy task, understand, to rule over the dust of a crumbling nation. He was a powerful man, but power could not stop his people from dying, or his kingdom from withering, or the other vampires from spitting in his face. A wry, humorless smile twisted his lips. But love, a powerful drug. Not enough to convince him. Not enough to make him the optimist his young wife was, but enough to make him think a dangerous word. Maybe. So the king married his lover, and not long after she was with child. It is during this time that, as is often tradition with royal families, the king and queen visited a seer.
I leaned forward a little, curious. I'd heard that the House of Blood often employed seers, though not much about what they often learned from them.
But insight from seers, as you might know, can be a bit spotty. While it's tradition for expecting highborn women in the House of Blood to visit a seer, the results of those sessions are usually vague, ego-stroking affairs. Predictions of great skill, or loyalty, or intelligence, that kind of thing. So this was, perhaps, what the king and queen were expecting when they visited the seer that night. Instead, what they got was a prophecy.
I scoffed. I couldn't help myself. Septimus laughed and raised his palm.
I know. They have quite a reputation. But this seer was trustworthy. While her predictions were somewhat vague, they were never untrue. When she completed her ritual, she was shaken. She told them that their son would either save the House of Blood or end it. The king was troubled by this news, but the queen was ecstatic. She barely heard the foreboding warning, only the hope for the future. Her son was destined to save their kingdom.
I stared flatly at him.
So we're sitting here so you can tell me all about how you're the destined savior of the Bloodborne.
The corner of his mouth curled.
You don't know how to enjoy the twists and turns of good storytelling, Dove.
He cleared his throat and continued.
Months pass, and soon the House of Blood has a new little prince. The king and queen adored their son. They showered him with everything a child could want.
I shifted uncomfortably in my chair. It was practically unheard of for vampire parents to treat their children with obvious love. I'd witnessed the Bloodborne literally dissemble their opponents in battle. The thought that their leaders could be so softly affectionate, it was foreign to me.
The years passed, and the boy was raised to be loyal, strong, intelligent, insightful. He was trained in the arts of magic, of war, of battle, of courtly manners. He was the very best of us.
Septimus did not look away from the fire. The expression on his face was hard to read. Mournful, angry, affectionate all at once. The realization fell over me. He wasn't talking about himself after all.
The decades passed, and soon, the Bloodborne Prince was ready to take up his mantle as the God-chosen hero of the House of Blood. So he gathered his best general and his best men, and he went off on his mission. To find Nyaxia, prove his people's loyalty, and earn back her love for the House of Blood. He did, in the end, find the land of the gods. And he and his men did complete several trials to earn Nyaxia's affections, though they cost him many lives. And then he scaled the most treacherous mountains of the gods to find his goddess one final time, to beg for her forgiveness for the sins of his great-great-great-great-grandfathers, to swear his fealty to her, and to free the House of Blood from its curse.
Septimus's face had gotten colder, crueler, the smile at his lips looking as if it had been chipped from ice. He leaned closer, the remnants of his last drag blowing in my face with his next words.
And do you know, Dove, what that miserable cunt did then?
He didn't wait for an answer, didn't breathe, didn't blink.
She laughed at him, he said, and then she killed him.
The words came down like the blade of a guillotine.
She left his general alive, though forever tainted, and sent him back to the House of Blood with the prince's head.
Septimus's eyes slipped back to the fire.
I have only heard my mother cry once, he murmured. Only once.
Understanding dawned on me. He was your brother, I said.
One of them. My parents were unusually fertile for a vampire couple. I had 7 siblings, 6 brothers, 1 sister.
Had. He let out a humorless laugh.
The sister is alive. Not that that's much comfort to my parents. Maybe they're still off in the House of Blood right now, trying to make another male heir. Still hoping that prophecy of theirs might come true somehow.
He lifted his cigarillo to his lips.
Do you know what that makes me, Dove? That makes me the last resort. So you see.
A wry smirk, and he let out a long, slow stream of smoke.
I understand what it feels like to not have time. You and I, we don't get centuries to play our games like they do. And I think it makes us better, more ruthless, more willing to do what needs to be done.
He moved closer still, so close that I felt the urge to lean back in my chair, put some more distance between me and the hungry look in his eye.
And I am willing to do whatever needs to be done.
I didn't like the way he was looking at me. I'd learned young to recognize when vampires were looking at me with desire,
though this wasn't about desire for my blood or my body, this, somehow, seemed even more dangerous.
I should be going, I said. Get some rest before. I started to rise, but Septimus caught my arm.
My bet has always been on you, Aurea, he said. And if I have to choose, my bet will stay with you. All I ask for is loyalty.
I fought hard to keep my face still, to reveal nothing.
Septimus was choosing his words carefully, but I knew what he was offering me, knew what he was implying. And for better or worse, I knew that if I accepted his offer, he would hand me the crown to the House of Night. Yes, it would be a danger.